enemies and the compass. Part 1. Benevolent and Malevolent. In our world of duality and polarities, some things are clearly benevolent toward particular aims, and others are malevolent toward those aims. It's crucial to realize that whether something is benevolent or malevolent depends on what one wants. A young child thinks unlimited candy is benevolent because it tastes good, while a parent, valuing the child's future health and development, regards it as malevolent. Such attitude differences persist throughout life. People often regard whoever gives them candy, alcohol, drugs, license to do what they want, or anything free as benevolent, even though the act is often malevolent. The consequences come later: illness, addiction, becoming weak and disempowered, or the bill for what was supposedly free. Sometimes the giver's intent is completely innocuous, and sometimes there is great malevolence underneath sweet-sounding persuasion. Children hopefully grow up to see the wisdom of the restrictions of good parents and feel grateful. When they become adults, some decide to look further down the road to see this wisdom, and others remain stuck in self-centered pleasure-seeking, desiring immediate gratification at any cost. Wise people who advocate for what is best for everyone in the long term do not often win votes or popularity contests at this time in history. Human beings are inclined to demonize anyone or anything that stands in the way of getting what they want. They label it as bad or evil. They criticize and condemn it because it obstructs their desires or their ego. But often it is neither demonic nor evil, just another human being or something nature has created. Enemies do not necessarily look like scary demons. They can appear in beguiling disguises with tempting offers and promises to fulfill our heart's desires. Demons, by definition, have hardness of heart. Angels, by definition, have love and wisdom. Both can be restrictive. Both can be freeing. Both can bring pain. Both can bring pleasure. Politicians convinced people in one city to vote for new water pipes, claiming that a wealthy city nearby was going to pay for them. After the new system was installed in both cities, everyone's water bills rose dramatically. One city does not normally pay for another city's improvements, but people were deceived by promises of free. Angels and saints can also come in disguise. Hindu lore tells how the gods churned the ocean to acquire the nectar of immortality. When the pot of nectar emerged, the god Vishnu appeared as an enchanting maiden to distract the demons so that only the deities, not the demons, would become immortal. The demons were foiled due to their own weakness, which is exactly what happens to us humans in real life. Another story tells of King Mahabali, who loved God but became arrogant due to his great success. During a ritual, the god Vishnu appeared to him as a lowly dwarf and requested as much land as he could cover with 3 steps. The king agreed, whereupon Vishnu grew large and covered the whole world with 1 step and the next world with his 2nd step. The king had no more land to give him, but he had given his word. In humiliation, the king offered his own head as the last step, eliminating his pride. Distinguishing between benevolent and malevolent is a task for the intellect, which evaluates sensory data. We need to observe carefully with all our senses, including our gut feelings, and use discernment, reason, and memory. Wise discrimination comes with lots of experience. Part 2. Only 2 directions. The spiritual compass has only 2 directions, toward goodness, truth, source, God, the one thing, and away from it. For one person, the direction toward this one thing may be eastward from where they are. For another person, it may be southward, or upward, or downward, or anything in between. The direction looks different only because people are in different places with different histories. From wherever one is, only this one direction matters. These two directions define the spiritual compass. Spiritual in this context does not indicate spirits or simply the unseen. What is invisible may have an absolutely good influence or an absolutely bad influence. The spiritual compass points toward and away from goodness. Each of the two directions can have an infinite number of flavors, varieties, shades, and colors, specific paths of action. But there are only two directions, not a continuum of sort of in one direction or the other. It is not possible to simultaneously serve two masters, and it is not possible to simultaneously proceed toward goodness and away from it. Sometimes it seems like a course of action will benefit one person or group and harm another. However, when one looks very deeply at the whole picture at all levels, what is truly best for one person is always what is truly best for everyone else, too. We don't perceive all, but we can do our best. We need to remember that, like a child who wants the whole candy store, what is really best is not necessarily what someone wants, agrees with, or what feels good immediately. These two directions can also be described as toward the true self, ego with a capital E, and toward the fake self, ego with a small e. The fake self is a real thing. It includes the body, emotions, mind, intellect, and our sense of being a separate entity. It is an instrument, a vehicle we are in, not what we really are. Our true identity is a soul connected with our source. The goal is for one's soul, one's true self, to use and direct one's instrument. The fake self is called fake because it masquerades as our true identity, presenting its needs and desires to our awareness. The fake ego self is impermanent and knows it. In its doomed effort to become permanent, it uses everything possible for its own growth and aggrandizement, for its own benefit, security, and longevity. It even uses truth, fairness, and happiness for its own ends, skewing, twisting, or obscuring them as needed to serve itself. Presently, most people identify more strongly with their fake selves than with their real selves. Elevating the fake self to an undeserved position causes people to act out of fear, selfishness, greed, separation, and untruth. Thus, confusion and deception abound, and our world has lost its way. Restoring our individual and collective sanity depends on restoring the fake ego self to its proper subservient place and restoring goodness, truth, source, God, the one thing, to its proper primary place. We need to reorient according to the two directions on the spiritual compass. Many people want other people and the world to reorient first. They point to all the systems to which we are subject that reward selfishness and greed, and they only want to change when the external systems change. This renders them dependent and impotent, unwilling to contribute to our collective improvement. It is individuals who make up our world, and it is when individuals orient toward goodness and stand strong that systems change. We must be careful not to equate the two directions on the spiritual compass with specific physical actions. There is no outer action that always moves toward goodness or always moves away from it. Usually, it is good to refrain from killing. However, on some rare occasions, like if someone or something is about to kill us and our children if we don't disable it first, killing can be a good action. Such circumstances are indeed rare, but even the possibility illustrates the importance of not relying on outer rules. At the end of his life, the Tibetan Buddhist ascetic Milarepa was asked for his advice. He replied, "If you find a certain practice increases your evil passions and tends to selfishness, abandon it, though it may appear virtuous. And if any line of action tend to counteract the five evil passions and to benefit sentient beings, know that to be true and holy dharma, and continue it, even though it should appear to be sinful to those bound to worldly conventionalities." What wonderful common sense, this rejection of rules and reliance on our two primary directions. We've been taught to conform to and rely on outer rules and codes of behavior, yet we have all experienced that these are often faulty. Regulations cannot possibly identify all situations that can arise in the future. People are different. Circumstances are different. People change. Conditions change. Customs change. Cultures change. Technologies change. Guidelines can be useful, but codes are inherently inadequate. Box checkers, computers, and artificial so-called intelligence can never substitute for human wisdom or for human justice. It's important to realize that a benevolent intent, which is often conscious, is not sufficient to discern whether an action goes in one of the two directions. We humans have much motivation that is subconscious. Looking honestly and deeply is imperative. It is also important to realize that the two directions on the spiritual compass have nothing to do with beliefs, opinions, religion, faith, or dogma. Believing something does not make it true. Opinions, however expert or universal they might be, are not necessarily correct. Perspectives are different, but there is only one spiritual compass. How can we sense the two directions of the spiritual compass clearly? The easiest way to begin is to recognize what is not toward goodness, not it. The calls and cries of what is not it are much louder than the soft whispers of what is it. What is it does not attempt to dominate. Part 3. Reading the Spiritual Compass, Not It. As we learn to recognize more and more clearly the fake self and its sneaky, deceptive, selfish ways, we are better able to distinguish the motives and sneaky, deceptive ways of external enemies. We can also learn to recognize these ways through experience and better recognize our fake self. Common vices are almost always in the direction of not it. The only real internal enemy is our fake self, the housing, the vehicle of our soul. In its effort toward permanent survival, it is vulnerable to all vices until our soul becomes strong enough and wise enough to recognize the two directions and reject what is not toward goodness. Arrogance, pride, self-aggrandizement is fairly easy to identify. Pride is based on an exaggerated sense of self-importance or self-worth, and thus untruth. This is a clear example of the fake self inflating its image and trying to sell it to our mind as reality. When someone tries to motivate us through flattery, pampering our fake ego self, it smells of not it. When someone praises our intelligence or special abilities, enticing us with secret knowledge, immortality, or magical power to dominate others or get our way, it's a sign of not it. Seeking secret knowledge or magical abilities is not wrong. The warning sign is flattery, seduction into gaining power for selfish reasons, and temptation to misuse it. Greed, a willingness to exploit others for personal pleasure or gain, is certainly not it. Theft, lust, a desire to use or take from someone by force or trickery, is certainly not it. Anything rooted in jealousy or envy is not it. Putting people down simply because they have different customs or are not in one's tribe or group is not it. Recklessness is not it. Indolence is not it. Not it usually involves deception in one form or another. Truth with a capital T is the goal. Untruth is in the opposite direction. Truth can be painful, but untruth is a real enemy. Deceit is a real enemy. Delusion is a real enemy. Willful blindness is a real enemy. Illusion is not an enemy when it is made clear that it is an illusion. Storytelling, futuristic thinking, art, and humor are immeasurably valuable in childhood, social interactions, and in creative endeavors. Only when illusion is not identified as such, but is presented as truth or possible truth, is it harmful. Vices are not vices just because someone says so. They are vices because they cause hurt and harm to others, to ourselves, and to society. Vices are internal enemies. Most people don't harm others deliberately, and often not even consciously, but we all get hurt anyway. People addicted to alcohol or drugs are often extremely kind and don't wish to hurt anybody, but they do. It's difficult for people who identify with the fake ego self to admit to themselves their weaknesses, mistakes, or negligence. Instead, they ignore, rationalize, concoct excuses, or make themselves blind or confused. People often deceive themselves with a false self-image rather than maintain honesty and integrity. Sometimes an outer enemy is a reflection of an inner enemy. If we are secretly arrogant, we can be fooled by flattery. If we are secretly greedy, we can be enticed into programs that exploit others and profit unjustly. If we are inclined toward anger and combat, we can be easily incited toward violence against a supposed enemy, even if it is not really hostile. If we are cowardly, we can be easily induced to be passive in the face of gross injustice. A desire to lead or be famous can arise from a selfless desire to help others or from a soul desire, but often such a desire arises from not it. Wanting to be liked and accepted and wanting public recognition for achievements are normal human desires, but if they overwhelm one's honest focus on goodness, they become vices. Any desire can become a vice if it outweighs one's motive toward goodness, if one becomes willing to ignore the spiritual compass and turn a blind eye to harm-doing or to rationalize or excuse it away. This is why some religious teachings advise followers to kill desire. Desires are not intrinsically bad. Many of them are good. People have natural desires to be productive, care for their children, learn, and see justice. Eliminating our good desires is obviously not good. It is only when a desire overwhelms our wish for goodness that it leads toward pain and suffering. The fewer and milder our desires, the easier it is to read the spiritual compass. The easier it is to feel resonance with goodness, truth, and joy. In addition to internal enemies, external enemies also exist. wild animals, wild human beings, demonic spirits. Some natural phenomena are also enemies, although we don't attribute motives to them. Poisons, earthquakes, lightning, hurricanes, meteors. The presence of an external enemy does not imply the presence of an internal enemy. People are not responsible for the will of nature or of other beings. If one is facing an external enemy, it might possibly reflect an internal one, but external enemies still exist on their own. Some external enemies are invisible. Radiation, high voltage, poisonous gases, subliminal audio, visual, and electromagnetic signals, as well as entities that are visible only to clairvoyants. All cultural traditions include such entities. Mogwai of China, Dakinis of Tibet, Asuras of India, Gorgons of Greece, Jinn of the Middle East, Tsitsimimi of the Aztecs. Jesus frequently drove demons out of people. Invisible enemies are very real. Facing an external enemy challenges us to use all of our skills, capabilities, strength, intelligence, and ingenuity. We grow stronger, we invent, we develop patience, strategy, discipline, and confidence when we are successful. Often, it's not even necessary to engage in battle. Sometimes we can go around the enemy, forge a new path, surprise or distract the enemy, or even win the enemy over. Confusion is never in the direction of our aim. Uncertainty, often. External disarray may occur for a short time, but if internal commotion and confusion reign longer, we're looking in the direction of not it. Better to wait for clarity. Enemies are usually deceptive in one way or another, whether internal or external. Sniffing the not it of deception is an excellent clue in recognizing potential danger and in reading the spiritual compass. Appearance, words, conscious intent, rules, and other people's opinions do not contribute to either needle on the spiritual compass. A special inner feeling with experience is our true guide. Part 4. Reading the Spiritual Compass, Resonance. When we intentionally focus on goodness, not on rules or words, but on the essence of goodness, truth, our source, God, the one thing, we become more and more familiar with its higher frequencies. This helps us to read the spiritual compass. We can compare a possible action with this higher frequency and see if it resonates, if its frequency aligns with the one thing. We feel this resonance. It is not a thought or an emotion. Feeling this resonance is not an intellectual process or an intuitive one. It does not require deep meditation or study. It does require that we be peaceful inside and that we be without bias regarding our question, either hope or fear one way or the other. It requires that we don't have desires that overwhelm our desire to recognize the truth. It requires that we be without pride, for pride results in faulty perception. Peace, a sudden inner peace, is a strong indication of resonance with the one thing. Not the peace of deadness where nothing is happening, but a peace that arises spontaneously with an idea. Often the feeling in the air noticeably lightens up when considering a particular possibility, even if we don't know why. The it direction always comes with an inner peace, even if it involves rapid, vigorous action. Joy is another indication of resonance with the one thing. Not giddy, ungrounded frolic, but a certain inexplicable joy of spirit. It might not make sense from a common point of view to be happy about a situation, but when reading the spiritual compass, a quiet inner joy resides in the direction of our goal. Truth always resonates with the it direction on the spiritual compass, but oftentimes we don't actually know all the facts and information. Still, one's body feels an immediate release of tension when truth is thought or spoken, even if the information itself results in tension afterwards. The less dominant our fake self is, and the better our true self is able to direct our ego with a small e, our vehicle, the more quickly and easily we can read the spiritual compass. To read the compass, we focus on the one thing until we resonate with it. Then we turn our attention to our proposed action until we resonate with this possibility. Then we turn our attention back to the one thing and feel whether the two resonate with each other or not. Note, resonance occurs everywhere in nature. Certain frequencies of light resonate with certain cones on our retina and we see colors. Animals and plants emit chemicals which resonate with specific receptors and thus recognize friends and competitors. Physics experiments bounce one thing onto another and measure what bounces off where. The measuring process involves resonant frequencies. We can go back and forth and fine-tune our perception of specifically what resonates and what doesn't. Sometimes we can adjust our idea, altering any aspect that feels off, and suddenly feel an aha moment of truth, joy, and inner peace. When we have read these two directions on the spiritual compass, we simply have an inner knowing. This knowing is not intellectual. It is not only the result of facts, experiments, and logic. It is not a certainty that comes from education, reading, information, faith, or belief. This knowing is not provable by mountains of facts, experiments, or logical arguments, yet it is not fantasy or delusion. When two people who are equally clear, equally free of bias and paradigms, fears and desires, ask the same question inwardly, they come to the same inner knowing. This inner knowing has nothing to do with religion, faith, belief, or opinions. In fact, religion, faith, belief, and opinions tend to block this inner knowing. This knowing is accompanied by a confidence and also by a certain humility. It does not boast or show off, but is more likely to be understated or even silent. There is certainty, yet not dogmatism, sureness, yet also openness. It is not bound or locked in. One knows that there is always a bigger picture, a bigger story. This inner knowing cannot be transferred to another person. An idea, insight, conclusion, or decision can be communicated, but the sense of inner knowing cannot be given to anyone else. Others can often feel it from the one who has it, but they can only acquire it through their own inquiry. Everyone has a capacity for this type of knowing. However, the more educated and indoctrinated one is, the more difficult it is to drop beliefs, opinions, bias, egotism, and desires, and thus to come to this quiet inner knowing. If an overactive intellect asks incessant questions, it swamps the quiet of inner knowing. Reading the spiritual compass is easy. It is dropping beliefs, opinions, bias, egotism, and desires that we find difficult. In the process, we realize more and more to distinguish between the true self and the fake ego self. It is an amazing experience that when we resonate with the one thing, goodness, we feel no need for combat or conflict. There is only one will. If we choose this one will, the way is easy. Even if the next step is to engage in an outer battle, we somehow feel that it is not personal. Tension and stress diminish. Awareness and strength remain. Our experience is, in the words of Jesus, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." If we insist on overweighing our personal desires, we immediately feel tension and conflict. When we surrender to the one thing, not to anyone or anything else, we feel lighter, freer, peaceful, stable. Perhaps this is why one of the greatest prayers ever spoken says, "Thy will be done." Life does not have to be regarded as a succession of battles. Having such a paradigm causes one to fight on every count, following strategy like Sun Tzu or Machiavelli. An equally plausible paradigm is that most people are cooperative, especially when approached as friends rather than as enemies. Coming into resonance with the spiritual compass looks like it is restricting from the outside, but from inside it is freeing. Beforehand it looks conflicting and confusing, but afterwards it is calm. To the fake ego self it is frightening, but to the real self it is enlivening. Feeling resonance is crucial in life. It's the only way to read the spiritual compass. Part 5. No real enemies. Children feel that the person who won't give them all the candy in the store is a demon, but it's really an angel. People might feel that a dentist is a demon, but it's really an angel. Sometimes when we look back years later, we see that something we thought at the time was absolutely awful was actually an angel in disguise. Terrible problems occur in life. We often didn't cause them. Other people did. However, we have to work and work, spend time and energy and money to fix these problems, and it's not fair. We suffer all kinds of great injustice from many enemies, day in and day out. Life is challenging here on earth. Yet when we meet these challenges, we get stronger. We grow, physically, mentally, and spiritually. Even if we seem to fail in some way, we learn something from it and are better prepared in the future. Often we contemplate happenings in life over many years, gain greater perspective, and glean wisdom. We can also learn from other people's adversity when we feel their experiences as our own. Just as necessity is the mother of invention, adversity is the starting point of wisdom. Strength comes only through resistance. Confidence comes only through challenges. Knowing comes only through resonance. Wisdom comes only through adversity. It is said that a soul can make more spiritual progress in one lifetime on earth than in 1,000 elsewhere. Few of us would disagree if indeed we have options. In any case, whatever we learn belongs to us forever. The more challenges we face aiming toward goodness, the more value we own forever after. No one can take away our experience or our wisdom. Only when we meet resistance, whether we invite it or not, do we grow. When we don't anticipate a resistance, we often label it as a problem or an enemy. We often attribute malevolent motives to problems and what we imagine as their sources. We treat them as enemies, applying battle tactics. Sometimes we wish problems to go away, to just disappear. But what if they all did disappear? We would become lazy and complacent. Our growth on all levels would slow down and stop. Would we really want that? Would it be good? When we are born, we have forgotten our past and why we're here. It's reasonable to postulate that we are here because, in our soul, we wanted to meet some of the resistance and challenges that exist here. We want to grow. We probably knew it would be difficult. We might not have realized how difficult it would be, but we probably wanted to meet some difficult challenges. The problems, adversity, and enemies we meet on Earth stimulate us to grow stronger. They motivate us to grow in whatever directions we choose. From the point of view of physical or emotional pleasure seeking, they may appear to be enemies. However, instead of simply looking at problems as enemies we wish would go away, we can choose to look for how we might be able to change ourselves, our minds, or actions, to think of new ways of approaching the problems. When we do, very often the enemy doesn't look like an enemy anymore. It is not threatening. It may even present an exciting challenge. With hindsight, we can often see how problems and enemies turned out to be valuable gifts. With farsight and insight, we can see and feel that everything that appears horrible or malevolent ultimately serves to inspire or propel us toward goodness, toward the one thing. All enemies are disguised opportunities to grow. If we choose, both inner and outer enemies help us get closer to our source and to pure joy. What looks malevolent with short-sighted vision actually serves a benevolent purpose. From a spiritual point of view, problems, challenges, and what appeared to be enemies serve a good purpose, our own soul's desires, and perhaps the desire of our source, our Creator itself, that we grow closer to it. Beyond duality, everything at its root is benevolent. There are no real enemies and no real malevolence. In truth, everything is benevolent.